Okay, let's say that you get together with 10 of your best friends. You have a cause that you're really interested in, and you get incorporated. You spend a couple of months of paperwork, and it's time for you to really make yourself known. Probably the first thing that you're going to do is do an open house or some kind of event. And there's a good reason why. Events are the backbone of most organizations. They're like a microcosm of everything that your organization needs in order to run really smoothly, whether that's your volunteer relationships, your donor relationships, your social media engagement, community involvement, event planning, donor recruitment, ticket pricing, sponsorships. You can look at the success or failures inside of an event that you've held, and you can really think of it as a microcosm for everything that your organization does, what you're good at, and what you need to be improving in. That event is like your organization in miniature. And this is pretty important if you're doing civil rights or something like that, but it's just as important if you're taking care of dogs, cats, animals. The Peninsula Humane Society is a completely independent humane society, and they do events like an annual gala, and they do a Bark and Brew Fest. They do events that are just targeted at the community locally, because they can't count on a national organization to come in and bail out the work that they're doing. It really has to march on its own stomach, and they've had a lot of successes and a lot of challenges in renewing the audience for these events, especially coming out of the pandemic. Lots of organizations are dealing with this, but finding ways to make sure that the ticket price, the sponsorships, all of the financials align with the value that's offered and that people are just really excited about what the cause is and how to support it. And, like I said, there just can't be anything that's closer to the heart than taking care of animals that often, just in the same way that humans don't always have an infrastructure of protection and support for their day-to-day lives, let me tell you, animals have it much worse. And so the good news is it doesn't take as much to give these guys a loving home and a shelter and something that they can be a part of. And the Peninsula Humane Society helps facilitate that good work in their own community and neighborhood. Now, for those of y'all who are in Atlanta, this is not the Florida Peninsula. These guys are based in San Mateo County. And for over 50 years, they've had an animal rescue, animal rehabilitation, and adoption center. I was able to talk to Larkin O'Toole and Brian Propes at the Peninsula Humane Society, and was able to get a real quick update on how they manage the relationships that are most vital to keeping an independent humane society afloat. It's pretty awesome, so check it out. At the Peninsula Humane Society, how do you guys fundraise, get volunteers? What are like the most vital relationships that you have now and want to develop over the next like 6 months?
I do think so. I think our most vital relationships are those with our volunteers and also with our donors. And we are always looking to find new avenues of people who would be interested in participating with PHS in one of three ways, either adopting, volunteering, or donating. And I think our reach, we've kind of like hit what we feel like is a cap on our reach. And I think if we dive in deeper with social media, then there's a really good chance of reaching a greater audience.
Yeah, a thing
Yeah,
that
the
immediately stuck
venue.
out to me was that you guys have really great events. All of the event ideas and titles all put a smile on my face and made me want to participate. Tell me a little bit about your current event planning process. How do you recruit donors specifically from these events? And what does your volunteer pipeline come out of these events? And just how does it integrate with the work that you're already doing?
I'll leave the events to Brian.
Well, currently we're ramping up for our annual gala, which is happening on November 2nd or 3rd or 4th. I can't.
I think the
It's
fourth.
that sat the first Saturday in November. And we utilize, with that event, we utilize some of the same volunteers year after year. It's a very successful rent event that raises a lot of money for us. There's a silent auction, a live auction, it's dinner and dancing. We also have a
Fun.
beer event. We also have a beer event in June, which is always successful as well. Our volunteers come from our community, and we find that the best way to recruit our volunteers is word of mouth. So our current volunteers are our best. They advocate the best for us, or are our best
Best
ambassadors
ambassadors
to
to
get
get
new
new volunteers.
volunteers. And I think the volunteers really have to come from the community because we don't really have any virtual volunteer opportunities at the moment. So it definitely has to be someone in the area. But our donors can like our work and can be from anywhere, really.
And then I did want to touch on the gala a little bit. So the gala we've been doing for probably over 20 years.
Oh, 40, 40, no,
Over,
maybe 30
I
years.
think, yeah, it's since the 80s. So, and we had the same audience for a very long time. Our gala audience was generally, I mean, there'd always be a few new people, but there would definitely be the people who would return year to year to year. And then obviously in 2020, we did not have the gala. We had a couple of virtual ones. Last year was our first one back in person, and we did find that we have lost a large part of our audience. So I know right now our events team is really brainstorming and trying to figure out how to attract, more attendees. We do not have that problem with the Bark and Brew Fest. The Bark and Brew Fest just came back hotter than ever. But the gala, I do know that it is our goal to kind of reach more people and get more ticket sales. That's something that we are hoping to do.
With that attempt to increase the reach and get people coming back or maybe coming for the first time and boosting those numbers back up, do you find that there are any aspects of the work or any parts of the message that you have trouble getting across in particular? Like, are there any like major disconnects, or do people tend to just kind of see the work and get it?
I think this is one event where a large portion of the attendees are not really very concerned about the work. They're maybe looking for an event to go to at like winter time, with like perhaps definitely something that is giving back, but definitely like a little less than some of our other events where people are very much there because they love PHS, they love the work that we do. This is more, I think the way that people look at it is it's people who are less familiar with PHS and or the I should say our newer audience, the people that we've started to see come within the last few years, and the people I think that we are again trying to attract more of are people who are maybe less familiar with PHS, and maybe this is a way for us to kind of, get our hooks in and then make them become bigger fans.
What are ticket prices like? And also, do you guys solicit corporate donations for the gala? Tell us about just the entire, how is the event monetized, and what were you doing before and after?
So that's a great question. And our ticket prices are so again, we run volunteer and community program side of it. So our event team isn't here, but I'll do my best based on my limited knowledge. I know that the tickets start at $200. I know that we do take corporate sponsors, and I also know that that's something that we have seen a jump in, which is great. We are getting more donors than we have in a while. And so, but I also know that our ticket prices did have jumped, like when, right? Like, but just to meet modern standards of ticket prices.
I mean, I think they went up in before the pandemic, right? I don't believe they've gone up since the pandemic. They used to be 150, now they're 200, 250 if you get a cat's meow package, which gives you a few other things. We've been really successful with donors this year. We've had three or four more top-level donors come in. I think the problem with the donors is they buy a table or they sponsor, but they don't provide the guests. In years past, before the pandemic, they'd buy a table and then they'd have their employees come.
And then the employees would bid on stuff.
And then like, the employees would bid on the silent auction and things like that. Mm-hmm. And I think that's where the disconnect is. So now it's really great we're selling a table. And in theory, it's great because then we can resell the seats because they're not going to fill the seats. But it's difficult filling those seats.
Go ahead. But
sorry. I was just going to say the thing is like the ticket price is just to cover the meal, essentially, right? And then where the real fundraising is on site in the event with our silent auction and with our raffle tickets and our live auction. And so if people are coming just to have dinner and they don't care about the cause, then we are seeing that fundraising opportunities lower a little bit. What was your question?
Yeah, that all totally makes sense. You kind of answered my question closely enough. I guess when it comes to like, you know, that large year-end event, one of the things that we did in Atlanta, if you guys have any local schools or universities, we would give out scholarship tickets to that as a way to entice volunteers. So if you've got like, I don't know how large that room is, but let's say that you've got like 20 to 25 that you want to give away. You know, those people might not be your core donorship, but you can also use that to motivate your volunteer base or your social media base. You get somebody that you know is going to bring a camera to the event and ask them to take pictures and be happy there. Maybe your donor base might not want to do that. You get the idea.
Something to consider is